Hello everyone, and welcome to the Waking Up the Workplace interview series. The aim of the series is to explore the cutting edge of conscious business. And our leading question, our main question in this series is, what would happen if we saw the business of work not just as a means for trade and profit, but also as a vehicle for realizing our deepest human potentials in a conscious and creative transformation? Now, that's a really long question. That's also because it's a pretty deep inquiry. Today, in the fifth interview in the series of 15 interviews, and we're talking to Tammy Simon. So my name is Diederik Jansen. I'm here with my good friends and colleagues Ewan on the call and Jeroen, who is working in the background to make sure that everything goes right technologically. So Ewan, how are you?
I'm very good, thanks, Diederik. I'm really excited to be on the second call in a row. For those of you that didn't listen in, Jeroen was speaking on the first three. So I really enjoyed speaking with Jeff Klein last week. That was great fun. And I'm really excited to be talking to you, Tammy, today. I've been listening to your own interviews over the last few years, and it's funny to be on the other side of the table. So I'm really interested to hear about your own experiences of running Sounds True. I'm excited.
Wonderful. And I love it when the tables are turned. It's always
good. Exactly. I'll just quickly introduce you, Tammy, before we hear from you. Tammy Simon is a founder and a publisher at Sounds True, which is an independent multimedia publishing company that's based in Boulder, Colorado. And the company is in the business of disseminating spiritual wisdom and has been for over 25 years, I think, last year, 25 years. So, that's really awesome. Tammy will be familiar to a lot of people as the voice of Sounds True, definitely to us anyway, because she introduces audio programs and does interviews with a lot of spiritual giants across the world. So it's great to be turning the table today. How are you doing, Tammy?
Wonderfully. Great to be with you both.
Great. Could you tell us a little bit about where you are in the world for those of you and those of our listeners that maybe don't know?
Sure. I'm sitting in my office at Sounds True, which is in Boulder, Colorado. We are just up over the hill from Boulder, halfway between Boulder and Denver, in a little town called Louisville, and we're in a technical park, our office building. So we have a large warehouse out here, 15,000 square feet, and then our publishing office, which is approximately another 15,000 square feet. We have about 85 employees, about 15 dogs in the building at any given moment, and right now two infants as well. So this is the Sounds True community, and I'm looking out at trees on a wintry day. There's snow on the ground. Had a light snow last night, which is wonderful because we can really use the moisture. We've had a dry winter out here in Colorado. We already started having fires in the month of March, which is an early time to. So we're happy for the moisture. People are celebrating. The trees are celebrating. And it's a little gray, though, to be honest. And I'm just happy to be with you both.
Sounds like a really lively place. I mean, we're actually in a really quiet place. Like, Ewan, could you say a few words about where we are today?
Yeah, we're just outside a little village outside of Amsterdam here in the Netherlands in Europe, and it's a place called Downlust, which is, physically it's this big mansion house. It's very big. I don't know how many rooms are in here, maybe 30 or 40 rooms. So we're in a room on the kind of left side. We've got this beautiful view out of the windows that I'm just looking out of now. I can see a hill, which we actually just practice some Qigong in the woods on the hill before the call, and beautiful fields with trees, and I don't know if I can see any deer looking out the window. No, can't see any deer right now, but often there are little deer playing in the field as well. It's a very beautiful, serene spot, and it's actually a place where the people who run it are really exploring kind of the intersection of consciousness and business also, so it feels like a very apt place to be doing it from.
Nice. Thank you, Ewan. I think we're almost ready to dive into the conversation, which is really what this is all about. just before we do that, I'll just say a few words about the kind of structure of this conversation. We'll take about an hour of a three-way conversation between Tammy and Ewan and me, really exploring this cutting edge of conscious business, and then maybe 20 to 30 minutes for questions and answers. And today we're doing a bit of an experiment with how we take questions. Ewan, could you say a few words about that?
Yeah, what we're going to do is we thought it would be interesting if all of you listening had a bit more of a chance to interact with each other. So rather than asking the questions through the instant teleseminar window, typing them in like we have done in previous calls, we're going to do a bit of an experiment today, and we're going to see if we can do it via Facebook. So as you're looking at the instant teleseminar page, there should be a link up in the top left corner which says Facebook page. Click here to ask questions. If you click through there, it'll bring you onto our Facebook page. And so we'd like you to just ask your questions right there on the Facebook page. To be able to do that, maybe if you actually want to do that, if you're listening in now, so you could click that link. It'll take you through to our Facebook page. Or you can go to facebook.com/wakingupthe workplace. And right on there, you can type in your questions. What you need to do before you type in the question, this is a little bit presumptuous of us, but you actually need to click the like button. I hope you do like what you're listening to. But if you click the like button right there at the top, that'll enable you to put in your questions right there on the wall. And what we thought would be nice is maybe now as you're listening, and hopefully you're on the Facebook page right now, if those of you listening just type in who you are and you know why you're on the call today, and maybe everyone can see each other, and it's interesting to see who's on the call, and maybe you respond to each other on the page there while we're having this conversation with Tammy. And then as questions come up, put them up there, and then during the Q&A we'll select some of those to ask. And it's a bit of an experiment, but we'll see how it goes.
Great. So, yeah, it's exciting to see. The reason we're doing this is because through the instant teleseminar windows, the only people that can see the question is us. So we thought it'd be nice to have that be more transparent. So we'll see how that goes. But in the meantime, I suggest that we get going, and we'll see what happens on Facebook as we go. Tammy, are you ready to dive in?
Let's dive in.
Great. Okay, so our first question to all of our speakers so far that I'd also like to ask you is, what does work mean to you?
Yeah, that's a big and deep question.
Mm.
I think the image that comes to me is the image, actually, and it's interesting that you mentioned doing Qigong before the call, but the image that comes to me is energy coming up from the earth, entering my body, coming up to the level of my heart, and then expressing itself through my hands and the creativity that comes out of my hands, and also through my throat and voice and the things that I say, and then through my mind and the ideas that I have, and that all of that expression that's coming through my hands and my throat and then through my mind in the form of ideas, all of that is work. It's really human expression, and it's expression that is being directed towards the benefit of others, towards uplifting others, and towards connecting, really, with others, connecting with the world. And for me, all of that, and I know that's very broad, but all of that I feel like is my work in the world. It feels that moment to moment to me. I don't define it based on what I'm paid for or not paid for. It's about being a conduit for life force energy to express itself constructively. That's work.
Wow. I'm just kind of sitting here, closing my eyes, trying to get a taste of the experience that you're describing, and it's a really powerful image that you're painting there. And what strikes me is when you're saying also, you know, being a conduit, like we talked to Brian Robertson two calls ago, and he was just saying exactly this. Like the rest of his experience of work was, I think, quite different from what you were saying. But one thing that he said is work for me is, you know, not so much the experience of working hard, as in pushing against the world or like really kind of... just this experience of really exerting yourself in that way, but more the experience of being well used by reality. which I thought was such an interesting way to, you know, to explain his experience of work.
Yeah, I think that's beautiful. You know, when you first asked the question, I flashed on the Khalil Gibran quote, "Work is love made visible."
Mm.
And I think that's a very classic quote from a poet. And I think what I was trying to describe was more the sense of the energy flowing through me, what that might mean. What does it mean to say that, you know, work is love made visible? So, yeah.
Beautiful. And with that, actually, in addition to Ryan Robertson, I think you've now also brought Jeff Klein into the room energetically, because when we asked him the question last week, he said the exact same thing. Love is work made visible, this beautiful quote by Khalil Gibran, and we dug into that. I think in the end it even ended up being the kind of summary, the name of the call with him. So I feel like even though we're just in the fifth call, in a way, we're starting to see some real patterns emerge there.
Well, I think what's really important, and I mentioned this, is that this disconnecting of work from currency and commerce, and if we think about it more just in terms of human exchange, that we're always in an exchange process. And you know, it's interesting when you mentioned the theme, and you said this is a big long sentence that is the theme of all of our conversations. Could you repeat that for me for 1 second?
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so the question was, what would happen if we saw the business of work not just as a means for trade and profit, but as a vehicle for realizing our deepest human potentials in a conscious and creative transformation?
And I think what came to me is that even the idea that we would question whether work could be a vehicle for our deepest transformation, it's every moment is a moment that holds the potential for our deepest humanity to be present and expressed. So every moment, whether we're alone or if we're in a moment of relationship with another person, a moment of relationship is an opportunity for deep transformation to occur. We're connecting, potentially or not, with another person. We're communicating clearly or not. We're co-creating or not. We're touching or not. We're seeing where we're the same and where we're different in any given moment. And so all of those are the moments that make up our work life. Our work life is all about this relating to each other in potentially a way that holds complete promise of fulfillment. It's there. It's there in every moment of our lives that we're in relationship. That is what our work life is.
And what our work life can be, because for so many people this is not at all the experience of going to work, you know, kind of 9 to 5, I go into the office, I leave my values and my kind of soul on my bedside table, and I just go to work and just do what's being asked of me, and I go home, collect my paycheck, and then I do what's really important to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think that kind of division is not something that's palatable to me. And it's not palatable, not just in terms of how I relate to work, but I don't want to be in any situation like that. Do you know what I mean? I don't want to be at a party where I feel that I've got 20 shields up or whatever. Why don't I just walk out and leave?
So I'm interested, Tammy. I mean, did it always feel like that for you, that work was a different thing, where it was an expression of love was the way that you described it? Did it always feel like that for you, or is that something that's come around more recently?
Well, I mean, I'm kind of a strange person in a certain way, meaning I dropped out of college because I didn't feel like I could actually be myself in an academic environment at a certain point. I felt in the academic environment I was being asked to pose as somebody who had answers to questions when instead I had experiences that I wanted to explore more deeply. And that subjective voice in the academic world wasn't welcome at the time. And I left. And I left and I went on a deep search, and I didn't know how I was going to be able to make a contribution to the world, especially without getting academic degrees, et cetera. And I went into a deep internal process where I prayed extremely hard, and the prayer had to do with being of service. That was the primary motivation. So it wasn't so much that I was asking questions like, how can I enjoy my work life, or how can I be myself at work, or I wasn't really even thinking that way. Mm. The way I was thinking as a 20, 21-year-old college dropout was, could I please be given the opportunity to take the talents that I have and all of the gifts that I've been given by a very supportive and loving family and terrific opportunities for higher education, could I please take all that's been given to me and give back in some way? Could I be a member of society that had something to contribute, please? And, you know, the prayer was, God, I'm willing to do your work. Please show me what it is. Please just show me what it is. And this phrase, willing to do your work, was very important to me because I didn't want to be willful. I didn't want to insist that it had to go my way. And at the same time, I didn't want to be will-less, where I was simply just, you know, waiting, you know, in a coffee shop to be discovered or something. It was this sense of, I'm willing, but I need to be shown. I mean, I'll do anything. I'll scrub the floors. I'll do whatever. So that was really my outlook towards quote-unquote work, which is, God, I'm willing to do your work, your work. Please show me what it is, and I'll do it. And I feel like Sounds True, this business, came to me as a 21, 22-year-old as a gift and as a kind of covenant with the universe, a kind of bond where I said, I'll serve you, I'll work really hard. And that became, you know, the other side of it was, and you'll be supported, you'll be shown. Doors will open, you'll meet the people, opportunities will happen. And this sense of sort of a cosmic agreement that this was something I could do. I could help distribute these spiritual teachings from different wisdom traditions from around the world, and I could do it with sincerity and devotion. So that was my outlook from the beginning. And it was never really about me, per se. You know, I wanted to be myself. I wanted to be authentic. And I wanted to make a contribution. And each step of the way, you know, I'm not willing to compromise, in a sense, this inner integrity or authenticity in the name of something else. One of the things that's always been important to me is that means and ends are the same. And there's not some end that I have, which is sort of disseminating spiritual ideas. And in order to achieve that end, I'll, you know, stomp on people so that I can distribute spiritual ideas. I mean, that's ridiculous. Do you know what I mean? There has to be a consistency through the entire process, which is why I started by talking about relationships and how relationships are the core of our work life. Because even if you work alone, you're on your computer and your computer breaks and you're in a relationship before you know it, or you're talking to someone through your email. Well, all of us are working together all the time. That is our means. And if what we're trying to do, and in my case, what I've been trying to do is serve this sense of expanding love in the world, then the relationships along the way have to be intact. And a relationship can't be intact if I'm not being authentic, if I'm not being myself. There is no relationship if I'm, you know, shut down, posing, or hiding, or whatever. That's not a real relationship. Mm. Mm. So I don't know if that makes a full picture for you, but to me, this idea of God, I'm willing to do your work, and the means and ends are the same, That's just been in me since I started my adult journey.
You know, I'm really kind of blown away listening to that, because it's, in a way, like I can definitely feel into that, and I think it's something that my experience of work and my concept of work has shifted a lot over the years, and it's definitely going in the direction that you're talking to, yet it's not always been that way. And I'm also wondering, did you have any models for, you know, like looking at work and being of service, is I think what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Did you have any models for that?
No. The models in my life were the great mystics. They weren't people from the work world. So, you know, I was in love with people like Hermann Hesse and, you know, reading, you know, books about Teresa of Avila and Meister Eckhart. And I didn't particularly think of myself as a business person. And even when I started Sounds True, I had no real sense of, oh, I'm going into business. I thought, I'm a mystic who's serving God. And in today's world, that means that I need to create a flow, a revenue flow, so that I can keep doing this. It's not gonna happen unless there's, you know, a flow, a financial flow of exchange in order that I can do more and more and more and more and more of this work I believe in. So there weren't any models, and it, you know, for a long time, you know, honestly, I have to say I felt very lonely in what I was doing, and I. You know, looked around, and what I saw mostly in business people was that they were sort of, to be quite blunt, they were kind of on a different planet than I was. It was like, I don't know what you guys are doing. You're doing something totally different than what I'm doing. And I kind of made up Sounds True's whole philosophical approach to business. I mean, we started talking about it internally as multiple bottom lines because we needed a way to talk about it. This was in the late 80s. And we described, you know, for ourselves, just to define what we were doing, that we had three bottom lines. Our first bottom line was our mission, our purpose, fulfilling our purpose. Our second bottom line was that we wanted to honor our relationships while we did it, the people bottom line. So it was purpose and people. But at the time, it was we just said, we want to be true to our mission, and we want to honor every step of the process, all of the people that are involved. And then the third part was that we wanted to be profitable so that we could keep delivering on the first two bottom lines, because if we weren't profitable, we wouldn't be able to. And so the first two bottom lines were non-negotiable, meaning we have to be true to our mission, or we're not going to come to work and do this. There's no point in publishing things that we think create confusion for people or are empty and hollow and have promises about, you know, enlightenment and five easy steps and just leave people confused about, you know, when they go through painful or difficult times in their life. Well, what's this? I thought you guys promised me bliss. Or, like, that was never an option for me. The whole point was to be true to the mission. So that was non-negotiable. And then the second part, as I've described, the way we treat each other and the sort of gentleness and the humanity that and the truth-telling that we bring to situations, that's not negotiable either. And then the third part, we could be very profitable or just kind of somewhat profitable. And that part was negotiable. If we were very profitable, we could expand, do more, hire more, take more money out of the company. If we were less profitable, then we could do less. We could expand less and take less money out of the business. And so that part, you know, we've always tried to bring our greatest intelligence and strategic minds to the profitability of the business. And some years we've been more profitable and some years we've been less, depending on lots of different, you know, factors.
I'm so interested in you speaking to that, Tommy, actually, because funnily enough, I mean, today we've been exploring a kind of similar thing, really. I mean, and we were just talking about this before the call, weren't we, that you were asking, you know, what was the series about, and did we have this kind of product ready to push on everyone afterwards? And we were saying, well, not really. I mean, you know, of course, we are trying to turn this into a business, and you know, it'd be more than just a kind of a project in a sense. But we don't really know where this is going. We started this series because we were just so excited about exploring these kind of questions with exciting people like yourself, and that was enough motivation to get us to do it. I mean, you know, but of course, the tension that we talk about and we were talking about earlier today is, well, of course, but this is about conscious business, and this is a business that we're trying to start here, and we don't quite know where it's going to go or even necessarily what the business model is, to be quite honest. And sometimes we find it's tempting to kind of, or I certainly find it's tempting to maybe think, oh, maybe if we did it in a slightly different way, then maybe it makes it more potential, has more potential for making money or more people come into it. And, you know, at every step of the way, I think we've tried to be really disciplined and say, you know, we're not going to compromise on the way we do this and the values and the ethics with which we're trying to present these ideas, especially when we're talking about things like conscious business, which is by very definition something that you're supposed to walk your talk on. And I think if we were doing a series on conscious business and doing it in a really unconscious way, then, that's something I'd never go into. But, I mean, you know, I'm interested in that those tensions do come up for us when we're exploring this, of getting tempted about, well, how do we make it more practically effective rather than just keeping following the integrity with those things that you say about purpose and the relationships. I mean, how was that for you as you went through building Sounds True? Did you get tempted? Was it difficult to try and stick to those ethics? What happened on that?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, it's not difficult. What's difficult is saying the business is big enough. It's okay that it's growing organically. I don't need to sort of measure my whatever against you-know-who's whatever and make sure that mine's bigger. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you take that all out of the equation, I need to return a certain amount of money to a venture capital investor, for example. So part of what's been very important at Sounds True is we've been an independent company. We have one angel investor in the business who could be part of this phone call with us and is somebody who's completely aligned with Sounds True being true to its mission as the number one important thing, and who also doesn't need his money out of the business in order to have a wonderfully a full lifestyle. So he's not motivated. He invested in the company simply because of a value alignment, and he wanted to see the business succeed. And that's it. And so there's no external or internal pressure to perform at some unbelievable growth rate or unbelievable profit return. We want to be healthy. We want to be sustainable. And we have been for now 26 years. And that can be done without any compromise to the first two bottom lines I described.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be a huge company, and it might be, depending. Do you know what I mean? But
yeah.
That's being dictated by how much demand is there for what we're doing, and growing at a rate that is sane and not taking huge risks. Do you know what I mean? It's a very different way of tending to a business. But I don't see any reason, and I haven't seen any reason in 26 years that I've had to compromise on the first two bottom lines.
And I also have this sense of what you're saying with not compromising on that. And Brian Robertson, who we spoke to a couple of weeks ago, and we actually know personally quite well as well. He uses this word requisite when he's talking about organizations. So what is requisite for the organization, or what is requisite for its purpose? And I just think that's such a powerful concept. And what it brought up as you were speaking was I started thinking also, you know, maybe there's just a kind of requisite size for a kind of a business that you're growing, and there's just a kind of natural size or scale that it comes to. And maybe it's not the biggest thing in the world, like you said, or maybe it is. There's a naturalness to that, in a sense. And, you know, I think what I find, I'm not sure if I'd use it. Yeah, I will use the word kind of offensive, even sometimes aesthetically offensive in a way with some of the organizations around, is it just feels like they're not respecting the kind of that deeper purpose and what it's there to do, and they're pushing it beyond the requisite size that maybe it could have been if they hadn't compromised on those ethics that you talked about with purpose and people.
Yeah, yeah. I would agree with you.
But, Tammy, as I'm listening here, you talked about, Sounds True, you know, growing organically. And I think I read somewhere that at some point, or even several points, you were also included in kind of national top 500 fastest-growing companies. Is that right? Or did
yeah.
I get that?
No, that's true. The fact that the Inc. 500, Inc. magazine, has a list of the top 500 independent businesses and their growth rate over a five-year period, and Sounds True twice made that list of the fastest-growing independent companies in America.
So, I mean, it sounded like you were, you know, you were also saying that, you know, not being driven by either internal or external pressures for kind of growth that is not organic or not natural, and yet apparently that doesn't mean at all that you can't grow pretty quickly, right?
I think that's true. Yeah, I mean, we developed some titles and worked with some authors to create audio programs and now books that have been very, very popular, and that created our growth rate. And our goal was always to create the best programs that would have the highest demand, but there wasn't a sense that we were going for the demand without also holding true that we thought the titles were transformative. And, you know, what this brings up for me, I mean, and maybe this is a way to direct, to respond to what the challenges that you're going through now in terms of exploring a business model for conscious business and training, mm-hmm. whatever aspect you're looking at, which is, you know, having a good business model is intelligent. And if you don't have a good business model, good pricing, a good sense of what people actually want and what people actually need, not necessarily what you want to do, but what people need, what they're looking for, what will be of true benefit to other people that they're willing to pay for, well, I mean, then you're not going to be able, I mean, you can talk all you want about mission and people, you're not going to have a profitable business if you haven't tuned in and designed a proper business model. And there's no reason that all of this can't go together. In fact, they go beautifully together, because once you have a business model that works, customers will actually love you more and patronize you more if they can also feel a clear sense of purpose and integrity with the business, and if they see your business listed as one of the best companies to work for, and you have a wonderful reputation in the industry. You know, it's what's called a love mark. You know, if you're, instead of a trademark, if your business has a love mark out in the world, it will actually perform even better with customers and will help your good business model perform fabulously. So there's no reason all of these pieces can't fit together, and you need the strong business model. And I think the strong business model, it's not that complicated. Look, I'm not any kind of strategic genius or whatever, but I can get out an envelope and a pen and do a back of the envelope analysis on a different distribution channel or a new product format. And, you know, it's not that complicated to figure out, will this be profitable or not? I've also, you know, relied heavily. Sounds True, of course, has a good CFO, and, you know, it's been very important to me as somebody who's more entrepreneurial and has a lot of visions to always sit down with the CFO and say, hey, help me model this out. Does this feel good to you? Do you think this is the right, you know, let's run a test. Is this the right, you know, kind of new channel or new product, you know, format for us to be exploring? What kind of pricing do you think will work so we have a good enough margin? And I mean, obviously these are sort of the basics of developing a good business model, and we have to do that or we won't be successful.
Yeah, I mean, that really also makes me wonder, one of the reasons I have been looking forward to this call so much is that you have over 25 years of experience of actually running, you know, building and running what I think is a conscious business. And, you know, I'm also thinking, like, a lot of the times and in some of the calls so far, we've been going into, you know, maybe more a little bit of the exploring questions about what is conscious business and, you know, almost the kind of societal shifts that are happening in terms of the paradigms around work and business and kind of those bigger picture views. And what I've been dying to also ask you about is, like, what is it like running a conscious business day to day? Like, what does your work day look like?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, so just to sort of set the stage to answer that, I mean, for me, the question is, what does it mean to be a conscious person? Because there really isn't separation in a sense, meaning I can't like wake up and have an argument or be rude to my partner and then come in and run my conscious business. You know, it's not going to work. And so this whole sort of compartmentalizing of I'm this kind of person when I wake up and I make breakfast, and then I'm a different kind of person when I go into work. I mean, to me, the total 24/7 commitment is to be someone who's able to be in the moment, speak from my heart, and be in a congruent relationship with the heart and the mind and the voice. You know, what do I need to say? How can I connect? How can I contribute? So that's happening all the time, whether I'm at work or at home. Now, in terms of my actual work life, you know, I'm the CEO of a business that has a leadership team of four very strong leaders, and so a part of my day involves working with them and helping them resolve whatever issues are happening in their departments. So that's part of what I do, and I trust them to then work down within the organization and handle whether it's finance and operations is one of the leaders, the editorial creative side of the company is another one of our members of the leadership team, then we have a sales and trade distribution, and then our fourth member has the digital business and the direct-to-customer business all goes through her part of the company. And so once a week we have a two-hour executive team meeting, and that's when we go over our metrics and see how the business is doing and make whatever kinds of adjustments are necessary. We also have a 90-minute acquisitions meeting once a week where we talk about new products. I also, as you mentioned in the introduction, I host a podcast series, and I travel about 40% of the time, 30 to 40% of the time. And I mean, I can talk to you about what I do when I'm traveling, but when I'm in the office, I often have to record two or three podcasts a week, one or two, three, depends, so that those are banked for the business, so that they run the podcast series when I'm gone. And the usually takes me about an hour to prepare for the interview, and then another hour, hour and a half to do the interview. And I don't know if you're getting kind of a sense of what my week might be like. I'm often on the phone with authors. I don't know if this was really your question, but I mean, I'm basically scheduled chock-o-block from 9 in the morning till about 5:30 at night. I usually take an hour for lunch where I don't have anything scheduled so that I can kind of just relax and regroup. And I often handle communications, email communications, and even some phone communications during the evenings and on weekends. Not all the time, but often that's how I catch up on that part of the communication, because my days in the office are very full.
And I heard a rumor that it sounds true that you all sit down and eat lunch together. Is that true?
That's not true.
It's
okay. We have a kitchen, and there's active group lunching in the kitchen at any given time, but people take lunch whenever they want, and some people go out, and so no, we don't sit down together.
Okay, but you do have an actual kitchen.
We have a kitchen, and there are definitely people cooking, and you know, at any given time, you can find a bunch of people who are cooking together or eating together, but it's not like a 84-person, 85-person, you know, group lunch experience.
Okay, right. Yeah, because I think I heard a story where when you had the office built, and I think you were talking to the builders and getting the oven put in, and they were a little bit surprised that you wanted to have an actual cooker in your office and rather than having a microwave. That's true, right?
That part is true. And it
okay,
was, you know,
good.
Very small, it was a very small thing, but they were like, well, just put a microwave. And I was like, well, what if people actually want to, like, cook a meal? Like, they don't want to just eat a thing in a plastic container in the microwave. I mean, what if they want to do something else? Can't we have a stove? And what was interesting to me was that the builders who have built all kinds of office buildings throughout, you know, Boulder County thought this was unusual. And I was like, think a stove's unusual? It seems to me like that would be, it's a kitchen. How can you have a kitchen without a stove? What are you talking about? What is a microwave? I mean, meaning I understand the function of microwaves, but it's not the same as cooking lunch.
I think that's also what, you know, I was really curious about with this question about your workday. Like, how is Sounds True different from another multimedia publishing company or even something else, you know? Like, because what you were just saying with this kitchen, for example, in a way, apparently it's unusual, or at least it's unusual for these builders. Then when you were taking us through your day, in many ways, I think, it's kind of a really usual day for an executive as well. Like,
it is a usual day. I'd say here are some of the things that are different. Mm-hmm. We start our meetings, it sounds true, with 1 to 2 minutes of silence. And so if I have 10 meetings during the course of the day, I've had 10 minutes of silence, a minute or so at the beginning of each meeting. Now, that may not sound like a lot, but it actually is a lot. Mm-hmm. And in that minute, it's a chance to break the day from being one long freight train, which a day can often feel like if you're in meetings, 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 and you have a moment where you're actually just sitting, silently breathing. I like to actually really relax and drop my energy at that point, feel myself breathing the energy of the earth up into my feet. And in just a minute, I can pretty radically reset myself for a new meeting. And I also like to connect at a feeling level with the other people who are silently preparing for the meeting. And what I've noticed is that we don't all start in a jumble, but we start sort of from a centered, singular place, and then the meeting begins. So I think that's one thing that's unique about Sounds True. Another thing I mentioned, that we have dogs in the office, and it may not sound like a big deal, but it changes the environment quite a lot. And also, for those people who have dogs, you have to take your dog out. So before you know it, you're having the equivalent of taking a cigarette break, but you don't need to smoke a cigarette. But mm-hmm. you have the equivalent of going outside, breathing the air, taking a short walk. And so I bring my dog to work, and that's been something that has really helped me just get outside for a few minutes and also break that kind of freight train experience. I think probably one of the biggest things is that I allow myself in the course of the workday to spend time with people reflecting on how things are going, talking about how we're feeling. And this is something that I learned from a management consultant and author, Peter Block. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you've ever heard of him, but he's one of my favorite writers in the field, broad field of what you could call conscious business. Mm-hmm. And it was a book called Stewardship that really influenced me. And it was about the book Stewardship that I was talking to him when he mentioned this quality, which is that often people will go on a vacation and they'll come back from their vacation and they're like, oh, I feel so happy at work. And it only takes usually 1 or 2 days, usually by the second day they're back, where mm-hmm. the person is like, oh, my God, take me back to Hawaii for 2 more weeks. I already need another vacation. And so what's happening? Like, what's happened to us in a 24-hour period that we need to go on another vacation? And one of his comments was that human beings need to reflect and digest experience. We can't just keep taking in experience without the time to digest and reflect, and that we have to build in reflection time into the workplace and into our lives, really. We need it. And this is something that's really important to me. So even during a day when I have meeting, 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 I know that I need to take time to digest experience. And whether that means that I make sure that I have time to meditate in the evening or the next morning, or whether it means there's some reflection that needs to happen interpersonally with somebody, where I need to talk something through with them or tell them how I've been feeling about something, that to me is a complete requirement. It's like would be like coming back to work the next day and eating another meal without having had time to digest the previous meal. And I think that that's built into our workplace culture at Sounds True. So when I see people talking to each other and they're not necessarily talking about work, I don't think, oh my God, get back to work. I think this is part of what humans need to digest experience. It's necessary. Now, it's different than hanging around and gossiping. And I mean, we have a very highly energized, motivated, and focused on execution group of people. And they're people who recognize that this is, this is a marathon. It's not a sprint. And that, you know, people who've worked at the company for, 10, 15 years, and that what they love about being able to come to Sounds True and be fresh and give their best is that there's also a recognition that they need to recharge, reflect, and digest experience. So, I mean, we have a meditation room at Sounds True. We have workout equipment at Sounds True. Several of our employees offer free yoga classes during the week that anybody can attend, both in the early mornings, at the lunch break, and at the end of the day. And they're employees who just are like yoga teachers in training, and this is a way for them to both get experience, and also they want to do their yoga practice, and they want to do it with other people. And all we did was, I didn't do anything. I mean, these ideas didn't come from me. They came from the employees. And I said, sure, sounds good to me. Will it cost me anything? No. I'm like, okay, as long as it doesn't cost me anything, it's fine. Yeah, you want to use the space that we have? That's yeah, it's fine. I don't care. Go ahead. Knock yourselves out. Mm. I mean, I could go on and on. For example, we're about to have an art show at Sounds True. And I think it's called Looks Good, Many Media. It's a takeoff on our tagline of the company, which is Sounds True, Many Voices, One Journey. So this is Looks Good, Many Media, something like that. And this was our art director had this idea that we did this once before, and it was a big success, and she's doing it again this year, that many people at Sounds True, and even people's kids, have created beautiful works of art, photography, dolls, I don't know, all the things that people, collages, sculpture pieces, and that wouldn't it be wonderful to have an art show where we were able to see people's creativity outside of work and celebrate it at Sounds True. So the art show will kick off with a reception for the artists, and we'll serve wine. We'll do this, some Friday afternoon at 5 o'clock, and we'll tour around the building, and the artists will get to talk about their creation or their kids' creation. And, it's really just a way to have a community. And that community, especially when it comes from within the organization and is completely organic, the way that I'm describing this art show, it gives a way for people to be at work as full human beings, not just, you mentioned, people come to work and they only bring part of themselves and they leave this other part behind, the part they really care about. I'll go home and work on my poetry or my art pieces, but at work I'm a different person. And it's a way to say, no, actually, we value all of who you are and we want to recognize all of who you are. And you may just be somebody who, works in our customer service department answering phones, but oh my God, look what talent you have. And it brings them into the entirety of the business in a different way. So the business isn't only about the leadership team stars who normally get the floor and the attention. It's suddenly about other people at the business who have a lot of talent but might be expressing their talent in a different way. So it's a whole ethos of wholeness, of human wholeness, which is why I described my answer to your question, what's it like to work, by starting with what's it like to wake up in the morning. Because I don't separate it. All the separations are what I don't understand. I don't understand how people do it. I was talking once to someone that I met through the conscious capitalism movement who is an executive coach to some Fortune 10 actual business CEOs and other very high-powered leaders, and I was asking him, what's it like? What's it like to coach these, super, big shots? Mm-hmm. And what he said to me was they have an incredible capacity to compartmentalize their lives. And I thought, that's so interesting. And I thought, that's one thing I can't do. And I don't know if it's just who I am or if it's partially being who I am, which is being a woman and being who I am. But I don't put things in a compartment. Like, this was that difficult business negotiation where I had to, draw the line and be a jerk, but now I'm teaching meditation on the weekend. Like, those compartments don't exist for me. I can have a difficult business conversation, but not one that has me act like a tough jerk and then go teach meditation. I can't do it. Those compartments don't work. I can't have a fight with my girlfriend in the morning, who's my partner, and then, you know, come in and suddenly be the loving and inspiring visionary. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't work. Something in my heartstrings are sort of pulling on me. I've got to resolve that situation, and then I can come and be, you know what I mean? It's all one sort of flow of life.
I think it's really intriguing, because what you're saying is so natural and so, you know, so true in terms of the experience. And yet I also know that there's this other reality that a lot of us live in, where these things are really different. And, you know, I kind of wonder, like, when we talk about this theme of waking up the workplace, we find that there's at least these two levels. The one is, you know, people waking up, you know, to themselves and what it means to be fully human, and then taking that and all of that into the workplace. And there's also another level, which is the workplace itself, and how the structure of the workplace and the culture that you create can either, you know, limit people in bringing their whole selves to work, or at least make it very difficult for a lot of people, or really kind of allow that and enable that. And I'm also wondering, like, do you find that when you're hiring people for Sounds True, like, it must be a shock for some people, right, to come into this kind of a company?
Oh, yeah. It is. And it doesn't work for all people at all. And so, I mean, of course, we try to vet this out in the hiring process, meaning we try to suss out, you know, we have this unusual workplace culture. How will you contribute to it? How does this feel to you? What are you looking for? You know, I mean, we try to sort all of that out in the interview process. But even then, it doesn't always work. But what I found is that the culture of Sounds True has a life of its own at this point. And if somebody's hired and it's not a good fit either for them or for the culture as a whole, it's almost like Sounds True is a being that bucks them off. I don't know how else to put it. Or another way of describing it would be, it's like there was an organ transplant, and the organ doesn't work. It just won't survive in the being. You know, so the organ won't be accepted by the totality of the being. And so, you know, we've hired people, and usually it doesn't take that long for it to become clear that it's just not the right fit. I mean, we hired someone at one point, and after a few months, she said, you know, people keep asking me how I'm doing, and I don't like to tell anybody how I'm doing, and I certainly don't want to tell these strangers that I've never met how I'm doing. And I like Sounds True. I'd like to work from home. Could I please just, like, do this work from home? Because coming into this workplace is, you know, everybody's, like, wanting to connect with
Relate.
Me. They want to really know how I'm, and I don't do this. And so, you know, we decided that she was actually a qualified employee, that we could use her for some contract work on occasion, but that it wasn't the right fit for her. And that made sense. Just wasn't the right fit.
So, I mean, I think what you're saying is that there's a very specific culture that kind of, you know, emerged or grew, or maybe already was there even at the inception. Like, what about the way that this business is led? And, I mean, partly by you, but basically, you know, by all of you. Like, are there any ways in which kind of leadership is different in Sounds True, or?
Well, yeah, but excuse me. I want to go back, Deidre, because I feel like there's one, and we'll pick up with this on the leadership question, but there's one thing. I feel like one of the things you're asking is, well, what's it like for all the rest of us out there who aren't working in this kind of groovy company, who have to go into their traditional job and face this rather cold workplace, and who might be hearing this? And, you know, my point is, I didn't like the game of society. I didn't like the game that I saw in so many different ways, the entire value system that I felt that I was born into. And I said, I'm going to make a new game. I'm not going to play that game. I don't have to. Why do I have to? I don't have to. And, you know, I would, you know, and there have been different decisions that I've made. And maybe part of it, you know, I mentioned that my partner's a woman, and maybe part of it was I had to come out as a lesbian. I had to say, you know, whatever societal traditional view of women in relationship who are going to have children, that's actually not what I'm called to do. I feel called to something else for me, and I have to do that. And I'm called to something else that has to do with how I want to express my talents and gifts in the world, and I have to do that. And you know, if you're working in a corporation that feels cold and terrible, you know, I would question why someone feels stuck in that. Do you know what I mean? It some businesses can be shifted from within, and there are ways to do that, meaning you can attempt to be more of this full human being in that environment and see what the outcome is. And if it's not accepted, I would leave. Now, does that sound too simplistic to you as someone who started their own business and I haven't really done anything else for 26 years? Do you think I'm reducing this to too simple an equation?
Sounds a little simple, but... Yeah, no, I think when you say it, it's absolutely true. And yet there would be, you know, there may be lots of people that, you know, could say that, but then it wouldn't be true. I'm just also wondering about it. Like, yes, it is, and...
These are the businesses of the future. I say that because the consumers are more and more, first of all, going to demand to patronize businesses that have these kind of love marks. Secondly, mm-hmm. I think the best and the brightest members of our society are going to insist on only working for the kinds of companies where they can bring their full self. They're going to, because businesses are going to want to hire a high caliber of people. We already see this. They're going to have to move in this direction over time. So this is the direction we're moving in. And I think for people who feel called, they're the pioneers. Mm. And this is what we're pioneering. And what are we pioneering? We're pioneering human culture, you know, human civilization, a real definition of civilization that supports our inner life, which is the place where we find genuine fulfillment.
I really resonate with you, Tammy, and I think, you know, that was part of our motivation for creating this series, I guess, to explore, indeed, what is that kind of experiment of human culture looking like, you know, as we come into the 21st century, and like you're saying, when people are getting, they're demanding more consciousness from, you know, the things that they buy or the environment that they work in, and I think, you know, as a relatively young person myself, you know, it does feel like there is so much freedom now, and there's so much promised, and it can be an interesting place where to try and bring together that kind of the passion, and you know what I hear you saying is basically you weren't going to play that game, and there was something in you which said I'm not going to play the game. I'm going to create my own game. But I am interested in that question that you and Diederik were just talking about, is it that simple for people? And, of course, it sounds like it was very simple for you, that there was something in you which said, there's no way I can play this game, and I'm going off and I'm going to create my new game.
Yeah, I mean, we could say it's simple, but it's also true that, you know, I've worked incredibly hard for many, 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 many years. What I mean by incredibly hard is... you know, I've felt so aligned with my work, meaning I've found so much joy and satisfaction from it, that it wasn't like I was counting, oh, I'm working, you know, 70 hours this week or 80 hours. I never needed to count, because I was simply living my life and so naturally invested in what I was doing. But you know, there's been a lot of exertion in creating the pioneering experiment that is Sounds True. And also, and I think this is a really important point, you know, my life circumstances were such where I wasn't trying to support, you know, a family with five children that I needed to put through private school or something like that. You know, I mentioned that my great interest when I was young was in mysticism, and you know, mystics lived relatively simply. Do you know what I mean? That wasn't their priority. And that's true for me. I wasn't, when I was in my 20s, it wasn't that I didn't have a need to, you know, have a lot of material success. That wasn't driving me. And it wasn't part of the equation of my life. So that was unique to my own situation. Do you know what I'm saying? I could see if somebody else had, you know, a large family that they needed to support or something. They might have, it might have changed the alchemy of how they looked at things. That wasn't true for me. I could afford in my 20s to work very, very hard, it sounds true, not receive much compensation, live simply, and keep investing in growing the business. And then, you know, as it turned, as I became older and had greater financial needs, the company fortunately had grown, and it's been, you know, a very wonderful exchange, me and the business together, you know, me giving much, but then receiving so much now at this point in my life. But anyway, I guess what I'm trying to underscore is I do recognize that people's situations are unique and that people might not have the same sort of luxury of the lack of dependence that I had, people counting on me. I mean, I was only, you know, making my own income to for myself. But even then, I think there are ways to create a bridge in your life where if you're working in a conventional workplace where you don't feel like you can bring as much of these values in as you wish, you could still start exploring working with other people in a different kind of way on the side and start to grow something on the side. And so there could be a gradual transition into a new type of business that might take 5 or 10 years for it to really fully mature, but you could do both simultaneously in some way. Now, just to cycle back, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I'm also looking at time. I mean, there's definitely a few things that we still want to talk about, and I think this conversation is so rich, and yet I'm also conscious that there are a lot of people listening in today that are posting some questions of their own, which I really want to honor and want to get a chance to ask some of those questions to you as well. So we'll go into Q&A in a second, but maybe we'll round off the conversation first. And for people that are listening, you can just throw your questions on Facebook, and we'll get to them in a minute. I'm kind of torn between asking you two things. I think really we can probably only ask you one, and then we'll have to give other people a chance to tune in. But maybe let me just frame both questions, and then you take your pick, depending on what feels most alive. Is that okay?
Perfect.
Okay, so the one question is, you know, coming back to what we were talking about before about leadership and what does it mean to lead at Sounds True that may be different from, you know, leading other kinds of organizations. That's the one. And then the other is, you know, you were also saying that in a way it's a matter of, you know, deciding I don't want to play this game and getting out of it or even building your new game on the side. So I also wonder in this shift to conscious business that we're seeing, do you believe that it's possible for some of the really big kind of unconscious companies or even small sometimes out there to change and to transition into this different paradigm? Or do you think it's more a matter of some companies will just, you know, cease to exist and there are new companies that are emerging? Like, do you believe that they can really change over? Or is it more of a revolutionary thing? So I guess those are the questions, the one about leadership and the other about kind of evolution versus revolution.
Well, I'll go behind door number A, the leadership question.
Great.
And, you know, I think what people say who work at Sounds True, what they find the most unique about the company is it's such a simple thing, but it's that I'm just actually willing to tell the truth and be myself, and that they feel that they can always count on the fact that when I tell them something, they're getting the straight skinny. And, you know, it's amazing how far that goes with people, how really far it goes. And I'll give you an interesting example. You know, I attended a conscious capitalism conference, and I heard this phrase, transparency is the new green. And I really liked this. You know, transparency is the new green. What does that mean? Well, that means that the new green businesses that are going to be successful, you know, where people tout about, you know, we have this green initiative and we're using wind power and this ecological savings here, there, whatever, that the new way that businesses will be on the real cutting edge will be to lead with transparency. And I mentioned this, that sounds true. I do these publisher's reports once a month where I talk to the entire company and I talk about things I've been learning on my travels and also about how the business is tracking according to our budget and new projects that we're doing, et cetera. And then something happened at the business, and without going into the details, it wasn't appropriate to me because it had to do with some personnel issues, and I couldn't stand up in front of the company and tell everybody exactly what happened. And somebody said, hey, I thought transparency was the new green. What's going on? And this was a very interesting moment for me. What could I do? And I realized that I had attached myself to a motto that I actually couldn't fully live up to, that I couldn't run the company and be 100% transparent, that there were legal issues, there were complexities also around how communication is skillfully delivered when it involves other people's personnel challenges going on, and that I'd adopted this motto that actually I couldn't live with. And I was like, okay, semi-transparency. I can only be, or I can be as transparent as possible. But here's the interesting thing. Everybody, it sounds true, they got it. They understood. They understood that I wanted it to be transparent and that there were things and situations that I couldn't, and they let me off the hook in a sense. So what I'm trying to describe by this is that even as committed as we can be to truth-telling and transparency, which I think are the core values of a conscious business, even the fact that we can't do that 100% can be received by people because you're telling them the truth about that. Do you
and
know what I mean?
That goes a really long way.
Yeah, I mean, people are mature. They get it. Anyway, that's my just little vignette to describe what I think it means to lead a business, a conscious business, if you will. But it's being real with people, keeping it real.
And that's really, that's so profound. And I'm kind of, I would really, you know, it would be awesome to be able to unpack that more at the same time, of course. I definitely want to honor some of the questions that people are posting, so I guess we will transition to that now, if that's all right with you. Let me just throw out a few instructions for people if they want to post their questions. A lot of you already are. There's two ways that you can do that. If you're on the phone, you can dial *2, and that will make you visible to us. That will kind of raise your hand so we can unmute you and hear your voice. And have you asked your question live to Tammy? And then if you're on the internet, listening in through there, like Ewan said, you can go into Facebook and you can throw your question on there. Then we can just start with those, and we'll have to read them out. Of course, we won't be able to hear your voice, but that'll still be good. So on the phone, *2, or on Facebook. Ewan, do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, just to be explicit about how to do, because this week we haven't got the little window where you can type the question in Instant Teleseminar itself. So if you just click on the little link in the top left there, it says go to the Facebook page, and then you can post your questions on there. You actually have to click the like button on our Facebook page before you can post a question, which, as I said before, is a little presumptuous of us, but we hope you do like what we're doing. And then you can put your question up there, and you can see what everyone else is asking as well. And some of you have done that already. So please continue to put your questions up there.
Yeah, so I'll kick off with the first question, which is by Lisa Hamaker. She asks, would you talk about one or two simple things that anyone can do to bring love and an open heart to the workplace, particularly in places where it's not really safe?
Yeah, good question. Well, one would be to actually physically connect with your own sense of heartfulness. So to give yourself permission. Because if you just do a set of actions and they're coming from outside of yourself, like you know, the heartful thing to do is to compliment people on, you know, how nice their outfit looks, or, you know, how much you enjoy their new shoes or whatever. You know, people can feel that. And the main thing I think that people are always tuning into is how we are, how we feel, that they're resonating with us. So if we're actually really in our heart, really centered in that place, regardless of what we say or do, people will feel it. So that's the first thing, letting yourself physically be in an open-hearted place. And, you know, that feels differently to different people, but I think we all know it. You can feel yourself actually physically centered in your chest, like breathing in and out of your chest, and feel a sort of fullness and flow in that part of your body. You can feel an actual energetic flow throughout the entirety of your body, starting all the way up, down from your feet all the way. And so people connect to that. So that's one thing we can do, even if we never say a word. And then in terms of our actual communication, I think one of the wonderful, heartful ways of communicating is how we communicate through email. And of course, we can send out our email left, right, and center in a rush without addressing the person by name, let alone by a loving nickname, which often goes really far. And we can like not sign our emails, or we can sign them. And we can sign them with something, once again, I mean, it has to be genuine or it doesn't make a difference. But, you know, I know I get beautiful emails from people at Sounds True, and they say things at the end of the email like, let me know if I can help you with this. That's nice. Let me know if there's anything I can do. I realize you're really busy right now. Or, you know, something simple like with love in an email. Now, I don't know if that would go over in this person's workplace or not, but XXOO is good too. You know, whatever it might be, but it's taking the time to, in the email, and it's not just to say something nice, but one of the things that I find incredibly loving is when people are very, very clear in their emails. That goes a really long way. To me, aggressive emails are ones that create confusion because the person wasn't clear, they copied too many people. So it's bringing a lot of consciousness to that communication that we're doing all of the time. So those are some ideas just right off the top of my head.
Thanks for that, Tommy. We have another question here from, well, her Facebook name is Mac Angel. I happen to know her actual name is Marnie. And she's asking, I struggle with introducing consciousness to my existing clients. I'm not sure if it's my own fear in being more authentic. I don't want to push away my existing clients, but I have such a drive to go down this road. So there isn't actually a question in there, Tommy, but maybe you could speak to that dilemma.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think we're always tuning into how much is it appropriate to say to any person or in any situation, and that we don't just necessarily blurt out the entirety of what we might want to communicate without getting a bit of feedback and seeing, is this a safe and receptive place where I'll really be heard? You know, we don't want to just sort of put pearls before swine, to use the expression, because it's not appropriate. It's not right. But can we take a little step and sort of test the waters with somebody and see what their response might be? Can we find ways to translate what we really care about into language that might be able to be received? So, for example, I've been talking here about meditation, which is a practice that's important to me and that I teach. And yet there's ways to talk to people about stress reduction and the importance of being in touch with the stress that they're feeling in their body and doing some deep breaths to relieve it, which is not like talking about meditation, but at least gets the conversation started and then seeing what the level of receptivity is. And the other thing is, you know, we can make consciousness seem like it's about some big, mysterious topic, but it's not. It's actually about human fulfillment. That's ultimately what we're talking about. And I think that your clients, all of your clients, ultimately what they're looking for, I think that's what humans are looking for, is a sense of our heart's fulfillment. And so I'm wondering, is there some way that you can actually address the topics you most care about, but put it in a language and in a format that will actually seem like it's nourishing to the person you're speaking to, because it's coming in language that they would find welcome for them. So being skillful.
And I mean, definitely that's something that's also, Jeroen and myself also work as consultants in this field, and it's something that I can speak to. So yeah, thank you for that attention. That's also really much alive to us. We also have a comment, which is maybe not so much a question, but still I want to share because I think it's beautiful. It's Philip who's sharing that he finds Sounds True so beneficial to all of us, and especially that Tammy, you have been able to connect some great guiding teachers so that we can listen and learn from them. So he just thanks you, which is beautiful, and I mean, I really want to echo that. And then a question that was coming up from Patty, which is, like Marnie, a more familiar name now in this series, which is nice to have these kind of regular listeners. She asks about the employee turnover at Sounds True and whether anyone has ever sued the company for violation of employment law. Like, she's kind of wondering how that works when employees are really true to the mission. And whether, you know, whether that would be different in a conscious business.
Yeah. I've had one lawsuit and a pretty serious threat of a lawsuit from an employee. Mm. The actual lawsuit happened, I think maybe it was 12 years ago. That sounds about right. And it's a complicated story, but it's from someone who was the CFO at the time at the business. And he hadn't been here that long. He'd been here about a year, and it wasn't working out. And I'll try to make the story short, but we developed a severance agreement and agreed that Sounds True would pay him 4 months of salary. We all signed the agreements, and that was that. But then I discovered a week or two after he left that he had actually created some false invoices and billed the company from his own private consulting company for invoices for work that was never done that he had approved and paid himself. So basically that he'd stolen money from the business. And when I discovered this, I refused to continue to pay him his severance package, and then he sued me. He sued me for breaking the severance agreement. And it's kind of a complicated story as it unfolded, but it became apparent that even though I would probably win in court, if the whole situation went to court, it would cost me far more money in court in legal fees that I wouldn't be able to recover than if I simply paid him a large portion of the severance. So we went to mediation. The mediator helped us agree to a number that I then wrote a check. And I said that I was only willing to write a check if I had 30 minutes uninterrupted where I could speak my mind to this person. And I was given
the truth-telling, right?
Well, so for whatever reason, I had this speech that had been accumulating inside of me, this venomous speech that I needed to get out of my system as part of my own completion. And so that was, you know, all a very difficult experience. Doesn't sound like a conscious business, does it? Well, what I mean by doesn't sound like a conscious business, it was part of business, meaning it was hard. He came to Sounds True. We had the best of intentions, and it didn't work out, and we had a difficult breakup. So, yes, that happens.
And do you find
that... doesn't happen often, yeah.
Well, fortunately...
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like something you would want to go through very often.
No.
Do you also find that employee turnover is really different from maybe some other organizations? I mean, you would, of course, have to know what it's like at other organizations, but...
Yeah, I don't have a statistic, you know, right now that I could, but it seems there's maybe about half to two thirds of the half of the people who are here, who have been here for quite some time, and then I think there's a certain amount of turnover, as well. So it's a combination.
Yeah, because it sounds like if you've worked at Sounds True, you know, then working somewhere else would be hard, because you kind of get used to, I would imagine anyway, kind of the quality of the work environment and the relationships that you build. And I mean, obviously, that's not true for all organizations. So, I mean, leaving Sounds True would be, I guess, pretty hard for people, right?
I think that's true for a portion of the people who work here, and I think there are other positions in certain departments where people are really looking for more growth opportunities than they're able to have at the company, and for various reasons, without the career growth that they're looking for, certain people decide to leave. I mean, I think sometimes people come to Sounds True, they work here for a while, but they're really, what they really want is to be an acupuncturist or something else, and that this is a job that they have for a few years while something else happens. So, I mean, we do have turnover, but we also have a large portion that has, you know, has been here for quite a long time and seems committed to being here for quite a long time into the future. So I know that's vague. I'm sorry, I don't have a statistic available.
No, but I think actually, I mean, personally, I am anyway more interested in the stories that you're telling than the statistics necessarily, because they paint a more more lively picture of what it's like to be working there.
Yeah.
There is actually a few more questions still, but not a lot, and I'm also looking at time, so I'm being kind of coaxed by my fellow conspirators here in the room to close the call, even though I think there's quite a lot that we could be talking about. I also want to respect your time, Tammy, as you were saying that you're in these back-to-back meetings and conversations, and I want to make sure that you get your minute of silence before you go into the next one. But before we close, maybe I'll just ask for a few closing thoughts. Ewan, can I ask you to go first?
I was really struck by actually the way this conversation started, and it just seemed to leap right in there, Tammy, when Diederik asked you about, you know, what is work to you, and you started talking about this image of the, or not even the image, the experience of the energy coming up, I think you said, out of the earth and kind of coming out of your heart and hands, and I just think that's such a beautiful image, and it does go back to what we talked about with Jeff last week also, which was we also closed in a very, felt like a very deep, open-hearted way speaking that quote again from Khalil Gibran of "Work is Love Made Visible." And I just think that is, I think it's almost the same as what I said last week, but I think it's such a beautiful piece that, you know, we are working, and what is work if it doesn't really mean something very deep to us, and that we really don't feel that we're being of service to the world. So I really appreciate you bringing in that perspective, Tammy, and the fact that you've lived by those principles and created a very successful business out of it, and one that really is serving the world and has definitely served me over the years. So much appreciation.
Thank you.
I just was also reflecting on my own closing thoughts, and what struck me most is that it feels almost absurd to be having this conversation, because a lot of the things that you were saying, I mean, in a way they're very profound, yet they're also simple, as you've been stressing. And I mean, you're talking about truth telling and you know, the quality of relationship and kind of bringing your dogs into the workplace, and it's just like, it's very grounded and basically just what it means to be human and to be human in the workplace. And it's just, it kind of strikes me as absurd that we need to be kind of calling you out there in the States from the Netherlands to ask about what is work for you, Tammy, when, you know, your experience of work is so natural and so deeply human. And it's so weird that I'm sure a lot of people, you know, because Sounds True, I think, does have a reputation for being a very special company, that a lot of people do ask you these questions about what is it like to work there and to lead such a company and all of this stuff. But in a way, it's just such like a topsy-turvy thing because it's so normal and so deeply human. Like, yeah, I mean, maybe I'm not... I'm not sure if you even get what I'm saying.
No, I think you're right on it. And it does. It feels, it does, there is a level that feels a little absurd because you said, were there any models? No, there weren't any models. How did I create, you know, I tuned into my common sense. How did I want to live my life? It wasn't, and so when you ask about is it revolution, is it evolution, are these big corporations going to change? I don't know which it is, if it's both revolution and evolution, but I do know that the scaffolding of a workplace that is defined by people leaving their souls behind and coming in order to make something called money so they can try to still squeak out a little time so that they can have soulful lives is an absurd tragedy. And it needs to be, that scaffolding needs to be taken down and not bought into. It's not serving our families, our communities, or the world and the health of the planet. It's not serving any of that. And I don't think we do ourselves justice if we believe we have to buy into it. We don't.
That's also what I really want to appreciate you for telling the story and kind of showing that it is possible and that there are natural ways and to know that there is an alternative so that you don't have to buy into this scaffolding and have to buy into this game. Like that, I think in itself, just telling that story is kind of a priceless gift, so thank you for that. And I also want to, you know, ask you whether you have maybe any closing thoughts before we round off this call, Tammy?
Well, I guess my closing thought would be that we don't need to feel that we have to do something like this alone, and that not only do we have each other, people who are similarly committed to waking up the workplace, but when I started Sounds True, I prayed really hard, as I described, and I believe that this kind of full, natural, human expression, that there is a cosmic field of support, for lack of a better way of putting it, and that if we're willing to tune in quite humbly and put our own needs and expectations aside and really listen for genuine guidance and genuine inspiration and work hard once we hear that genuine inspiration and guidance, that there's tremendous support for us, and that if we don't currently know the right people who will support us, we'll meet them. And so I'm a big supporter if we feel like we're trapped in some kind of situation that feels like a dead end or we don't quite know what to do or where to go, to know that there is a huge resource of immediate support available to us when we ask with a true heart, with a really, really true heart. And it's actually the sincerity of our asking that creates the strength of the response from the world.
I'm just smiling at this, and you're not able to see that, of course, but thank you so much for sharing this message of hope, and thank you so much for being with us today, Tammy.
Thank you. Thank you both. It's been really enjoyable. Lovely.
Great.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. Bye-bye.
So just to round off, next week we'll be speaking to another speaker, Suzanne Cook-Reuter. Who's been in the academic world pretty much all her life. I think she's an independent scholar that holds a doctorate in education from Harvard University. where she worked with Robert Keegan, and you know what really her her topic is, what she's really internationally known for, is mature adult development. So what we'll be doing in the conversation with her next week is kind of unpack this theme of waking up the workplace in a developmental way. Well, I think that's all I have to say at this point. I mean, be sure to join us for that call. I think it'll be awesome. Thank you for being here today. Well, hopefully we'll speak again next week. Thank you.